committee, the Education Finance Committee will come to order. And we have Senator Scogin has Senate File 672, which is the reducing and eliminating mandates proposal. Senator Scogin, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. What we have before us in Senate File 672 is a reduction and in mandates, adding some flexibility, reducing mandates, obviously, and hopefully some cost savings for school districts as we move forward. But still, you know, I think the intent was to keep the integrity of the Department of Education, school districts, and those relationships that they have with their taxpayers as well. And Mr. Chair and committee, I have a series of amendments to offer to get us started, starting with the A3, the delete all, to kind of put this bill in its original shape, and then I've got a couple of additional ones.
The Education Finance Division has a quorum, and Senator Scogin moves the A3 amendment, which you, I believe, have members have in their packets. Senator Scogin's motion. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I will now move the A5. In the delete all, we took out site-based decision-making. Senator Lynch asked me to move this amendment for her this morning, and she has had some conversations with some of the policymakers, and she would like this put back in, and I'm not opposed to having that discussion, so I move the A5 amendment.
Senator Scogin, we're going to go and, well, the A5 is handed out. We'll go through the A3 amendment so members are familiar with what's in it.
Thank you.
And I will ask Ms. Quay to go through that. And this, members, is really, I believe, Senator Scogin, the A3 amendment is really kind of the bulk of the mandate reductions.
That is correct. Through a series of conversations and people weighing in, this is the one we kind of came up with. And then we'll have a couple of amendments as we move forward.
Ms. McCoy.
Mr. Chair and members, there are some sections in here that do mostly technical changes for correcting for the PLRs that have been, I'll talk about in section, I think it's 19, section 27. So I'll just go quickly through those and then talk mostly about the substantial changes. Section 1 corrects the cross-reference for the length of days that was that is repealed. Section 2 eliminates some reporting mechanisms for the superintendent to report on the number of homeschool students that are in compliance and not in compliance. Section 3 changes the notice to the county attorney. This is something that we heard about in Senator Olson's bill and corrects for a section that is repealed in Section 27. Section 4 is another cross-reference repealer of the length of days. Section 5 eliminates the online 5, corrects a cross-reference for the site-based governance, and also on 2.25 allows the board to purchase a summary of a report instead of the actual report on curriculum instruction and student achievement in their local paper. It also eliminates the need for the board to make a copy available for public inspection, and also eliminates the need for the board to make a copy available to the Commissioner of Education. Section 6 reduces the, and Section 7 for district and charter schools, reduces the number of lockdown drills and fire drills from 5 to 2. So it still has at least, they can do more, but reduces that number from 5 to 2. Section 8 corrects a cross-reference for a requirement for assessment of professionals that was repealed. Section 9 reduces the prep time that is required in bargaining agreements to 80%. Section 10 deletes the allocation for staff development revenue, so the 2% set aside is still there, but eliminates the allocation that 50% go to this the school site, 25% for district-wide staff development, and 25% to grants to schools. Section 11 changes the budgeting information that's published in a newspaper from the full report to a summary of the report. Section 12 increases the threshold for the estimated cost of a site for which the school district needs to consult with the department from $250,000 to $500,000. Section 13 is the review and comment, and it increases the expenditure for a project from $500,000 to $1 million before they need to do the district needs to do a review and comment with the department. Section 12 changes some reporting or publishing requirements. When a district has a review and comment, they need to publish that entire review and comment in the newspaper, and this would require only that a summary be printed in the newspaper. Section 15 includes a definition of building, because that site-based governance was the definition that this section cited, and that was repealed. So this is a technical change. Section 16 aligns the charter school days with the deletion of the length of days that was that is repealed in Section 27. Section 17 changes the time for which a teacher must announce to their district their leave or their extension of leave. Section 18 does two things. It increases the total population from 2,000 to 10,000. A district that can hire a teacher principal or superintendent instead of a licensed community education director. It also, on 8.10, includes teacher in the list of employees that they can hire to serve as their director of community education. Section 19 aligns the definition of assisted technology device with the federal definition, and this was a recommendation also from the special education task force to look at how the state statutes and rules go over and above the federal requirements. The addition of "it does not mean a medical device that is surgically implanted or the replacement of a device" is, I think, mostly to clarify that it's not for cochlear implants. Section 20 is a cross-reference deletion for the requirement of assessment professionals that's repealed in a later section. Section 21, again, corrects the definition for the site-based governance, the separate facility definition, as well as Section 22. Section 23 is, again, correct the cross-reference for that site-based governance repealer. Section 24 is removing the maintenance of effort on the safe schools levy. Currently, districts must set aside $3 for school counselors, nurses, social workers, psychologists, alcohol and chemical dependency counselors, and this deletion would require that they still set aside the $3 but not maintain their effort. Section 25 corrects a cross-reference for the deletion of school days, and Section 26 does the same thing. And then in the repealers, beginning on line 17, 120A26 is the fact-finding and mediation section that is repealed, and Senator Olson's bill addressed this. 120A41 is the length of a school year. This requires schools to have at least as many days as they did in the 1996-97 school year. And this was also a proposal was brought up in the governor's bill to address this. A lot of charter schools weren't even open in the 96-97 school year, so among other reasons, that was repealed. 120B11, subdivision 6, is a student evaluation. And this this has to do with that annual report of curriculum and assessment and instruction. And there is a requirement that school boards annually provide high school graduates the opportunity to report to the board, and this would repeal that. Section 7 is a periodic report, and this would require districts to include the results of their constituency's level of satisfaction with the school in that evaluation in their annual report. And Subdivision 8 is a biennial evaluation and assessment program, which requires districts to include in their annual report objectives of the assessment program, the names of tests, the use of tests, and student achievement. And this was thought to be duplicating the requirement already that they must do annually to report on their assessments. 120B39 is a requirement that districts have uniform forms for state exams, and all these forms come from the department, so this isn't thought to be necessary. 122A32 is the requirement that districts over 10,000 pupils, if they hire an assessment professional, that person hold a graduate-level degree in administering and interpreting psychological assessments.
Did you miss one?
121A06. Is that the one? That is the report of dangerous weapons. The school districts have to report dangerous weapon incidents to the commissioner, and the commissioner needs to report on that to the legislature, and that report is repealed. 122A628 is the schools mentoring schools statutes section of statute, and this was funded in the 05-06 session and currently does not have a funding stream. 122A75 is the Administrators Academy, and that currently doesn't exist as I can as I've found out. 123B04 is the site-based decision making agreement section of statute. And 123B92 is subdivision 5, our district reports on transportation. And that's reporting that is done to the Commissioner of Education.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. McQuay, just a clarification of wording on page 8, 920, regarding the assistive technology device. When it says that it does not mean a medical device that is surgically implanted or replacement of the device, is that replacement of the device referring to the surgically implanted, or is it saying that they initially would have an assistive device, but they wouldn't replace it if something went wrong or it was lost? Is that what that mean? What does that mean?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I think it would mean that if it's already implanted, that the cost wouldn't cover the replacement of the device. So,
Mr. Chairman, it is referring to one that's surgically implanted. In other words, it doesn't mean that or replacement. I guess I don't quite understand what if the assistive technology device doesn't mean that, then why would replacement be an issue?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I think that in talking with Mr. Cordy, that if the device is implanted already, and then when this law goes into effect, it wouldn't replace. So it wouldn't pay for the replacement of it, even if it was, I suppose, warrantied or. I guess I could look into this a little further, but this language was taken directly from the federal language.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that's any comfort.
Mr. Corti, do you have any
It was my understanding, Mr. Chair, members, it was my understanding of how this was written, that under current law in Minnesota, if you had already had a cochlear implant, for example, implanted and paid for under the current law, that after this law goes into effect, we wouldn't be paying for the replacement.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair, I think Senator Olson might move the First Amendment. I know that she took care of some of it in her bill, and we certainly don't need to deal with Sections 2 and 3 again.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A6 Amendment.
Okay. We adopted the A3.
Did we?
Did we
adopt the A3?
We did.
We adopted. Yeah, we did.
Okay, the A3 amendment has been adopted, and Senator Olson moves the A6. Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that deletes Section 2 and Section 3 on page 1 of the A3 amendment that are dealt with. One is, I think, the same in my bill. The other is different in that we took the superintendent role out of it and give to the county attorney, but that was amplified a bit. And then on the repealer section on page 12, line 17, delete the 120A subdivision 4, A26 subdivision 4.
Okay, so this just brings it in line with the bill that we had just passed that Senator Olson had. So, all right. On the A6, any further discussion? Not all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair and the members, then I'll move the A5.
Okay. Senator Scogin.
The A5 goes back to the site-based decision-making provision that has some stricken language. This is one that Senator Lynch brought to me and asked if I'd move today for purposes of discussion.
So is it just the site-based decision that your amendment deals with?
I think those first few references in the in the amendment itself are kind of the technical part. I think if you get to page 10, is it page 10?
Mr. Chair and Senator Scogin, on line 1.9 of the A5 amendment is the unrepeal of the repealer of 123B04, and lines 1.3 and 1.8 of the A5 amendment are just technical corrections for that repealer. Okay. So you don't need the corrections any longer.
All right. Any discussion on that? Senator Bonner?
Mr. Chair and Senator Scogin, I don't quite understand yet. Could you tell me again what this amendment is doing?
It's putting the site-based decision-making back into my delete all, I believe.
Senator
Bonham.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scogin, when I first heard that we were repealing the site-based, I was a little bit concerned because I know it's been a powerful planning tool and strategic tool for the school districts. But then upon reflection, I thought I appreciated that we're repealing it because while school districts can do it on a site-based basis, we don't have to tell them they have to do it that way. And so we give them that flexibility, which I think makes sense. Senator Scogin, do you have a view about it? And do we know how our school districts feel about it?
Well,
Senator Scogin.
Senator Bonhoff and members, I agree with you. I like the flexibility of it, giving them that option. This was brought to me through discussions with other stakeholders and another senator, and I made a promise that I would offer it today. So that's where I'm at with this one.
Okay. Senator Kolk.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I was just following up on Senator Bonoff's question.
So. Okay, let me just see if I can. What the A5 amendment does is keep current law the same. If your A5 amendment was adopted, then we would keep the current law in place. Is that correct? Senator Cole.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, Senator Scogin, if we do not adopt A5, then in your A3 amendment, you allow for site-based decision-making, but you don't require it, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Ms. Hermanson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm here to speak in favor of this amendment. In Minneapolis in particular, by the way, I represent the Minneapolis teachers. In Minneapolis in particular, we are using especially the 123B.04 language as a way to get to more direct self-governance of schools. And Senator Saltzman has a bill later that will go into more detail of this. But I did want to alert you that there are districts out there that are using the language in that very specifically to institute some innovation as we deal with our parents and the staff in the schools. And if this language disappears, I'm not quite sure what would happen in relation to the languages around sites in particular. If you recall, when Senator Kelly had this committee, we had quite a discussion about the ability to generate some new and unique schools within the district, and we have a memorandum of understanding and have instituted a, quote, bridge committee in our district under this specific language that involves parents, community members. It's a memorandum of understanding between the union and the district, and very specifically it uses this language as the basis for what we are attempting to do. So we would have strong concerns about having this language eliminated from statute. Thank you. So we support this amendment.
Ms. Hermanson, could you give your name for the record, please?
Rose Hermanson, and I'm representing the Minneapolis teachers.
Okay. And Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, first. Ms. Hermanson, clarify for me. You want it in place, but my understanding is from the conversation here that it's now required of everybody, and this would make it the bill would make it voluntary. I think there's some confusion here because it appears that it's not required of everybody, but you have the tools to make it work. Or how does explain how that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson. In the language, and I don't have the language with me. I wasn't sure that didn't know that this total statute was being repealed. I knew there were sections that there were changes, but in the language in the law is a definition of what your council looks like, your site council, as well as what's considered a site, and that language. I mean, I don't know what a district would do. Should it be totally negated, and what authority they would have to establish these councils, because we've had the site language for quite a while, and I'm not sure how a district would view it. However, we are citing this statute as the basis of our memorandum of understanding and the work that we're doing specifically in the area of developing some new and unique sites, and we would have some discomfort if all of a sudden that language disappeared from the statute.
So Mr. Chair, at some point there is a decision within the district to use site-based decision-making, but then the law dictates certain provisions that qualify it for being that site.
That's correct,
so
Mr. Chair.
So it doesn't force every district to use the site-based decision-making.
No, Senator Olson, it does not force a district to do it. It's permissive law, but it sets the parameters by which these decisions are made.
Thank you.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Hermanson, I think the as I understand it, the intent of repealing it is to not be so prescriptive about the definition of site. And so if the A3 amendment as originally drafted is adopted without the deletion of that, then it would be permissive, but it would also be permissive to the extent of defining what a site is. And I guess what I'm unclear about is if that happens, it would not prevent the school district from continuing to do what it's doing today. It would just not require other districts do it that way.
Mr. Chair,
Berenson.
Senator Hahn, I'm not sure I don't see it as a mandate on any district. I think the language right now is permissive. However, there are some requirements, and I don't have that language in front of me. For example, I think if 60% of the staff wish to establish a site council and do something within that law, they have the right to do it, and that would disappear. I guess it's the question of the unknown as to what would happen and how that would be. At least we have some parameters, and we had a fairly extensive discussion around those parameters about 3 or 4 years ago, and this would create a field of uncertainty if this was repealed.
Senator Salzman.
And on those points, Mr. Chair, we have been talking about a site, another bill. We had a meeting here with a lot of stakeholders, and as we've talked about charter schools and that they're able to do many things very differently, this sort of model is something to look at for school districts of how they can kind of break out of the box, but at the same time have some sort of uniform system, which could be a good thing or bad thing here as we debate this, but also it protects those teachers and those groups who want to move forward and spend time in developing these kind of programs, that they have the ability to move forward and do that. And I think that's what we have talked about with this other bill, is how do we actually make it easier for them to do that, to have some of the flexibility that a charter school has within a public school district. So I do support the amendment, because I think that when I have heard programs, especially in Minneapolis, where they are struggling, and hearing how teachers are coming together, especially in Minneapolis, to do these kind of programs, if we're hearing from them that this is something that they think is very important to them, following through on those, I think we should be listening to them, because I'm very impressed with the innovation and the commitment of teachers to really address achievement gap problems. So anything we might do to disrupt that, I would be concerned about. And Senator Torres-Ray is not here to perhaps weigh in on. I'm not sure where she would stand on this, but I have been very impressed with what I've heard is going on in Minneapolis.
Ms. Alschweiger?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alschweiger, Education Minnesota. I think one of the most significant pieces of the statute is that if a group of teachers want to work, let's say with parents, and 60% of them vote to go to a site-based decision-making model, that has to happen then. And then there are a number of criteria about how that site then operates. The difference is, if you don't put this back in, that the school board can decide what they do or don't do. And it doesn't give the teachers any opportunity to kind of force that discussion. I think that's probably the most significant piece in this.
Senator Hahn.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ms. Alschweiger, I thank you for raising that point, and I guess that was my point earlier, that what this does is it prescribes in law, it mandates a process that, as you pointed out, overrides the school board in whatever it may wish to do with respect to site management. And I guess that raises the question of who governs the school. Do we say in law that the school board manages the school and is responsive to the people that elect the school board, or do we put in law that for purposes of site management, the staff decides? And I think that's a fair point. And I was going to ask Senator Scogin whether you had anybody from, the school board association recommendation or somebody. These came, mandate repeals came from some recommendations. I've seen the list as well, and I wondered if any of those folks who are recommending this change would like to speak to this, because I do think, Ms. Alschweiger, as you raised the question, it is a good one. Do we want to put in law a process that requires the decision of the school board to be overridden, even though parents and the community and the elected board may differ? And I think that's a good argument to have, but we right now have a law that says it must happen. And if we repeal that law, then it says it could happen. If the school board wants to permit that, it could do that, but we wouldn't have a law that would require it. And so I still think your original proposal, Senator Scogin, is a good one, and I'd be curious to know if you've got anybody testify in support of your original proposals, that we could hear why they'd want to have this repealed.
I'd welcome them to the table.
Okay. Ms. Kelleher?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the School Boards Association. And what we're referring to is the school districts and the management side were sort of entrusted by the Senate, the House, and the governor to come up with a list of mandates that really sort of tie our hands and make at times work difficult to get done in the school district. We came up with a list. Now, this doesn't include antiquated law of over 100. You see a few of those represented in front of us today. That list didn't really come with recommendations one way or the other. But I think Ms. Elschweger put it out perfectly. You could have a group of staff, 60%, come and decide a different direction to go for your school district, and they do get, you do turn over a significant part of the power of the school district to that site. And that's a decision we need to keep in mind as we go forward. We're going to have limited resources, and how do you want us to proceed with those dollars? And that direction really needs to come from you.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, Senator Hamm.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Kelleher, thank you. I guess my question would be, what if the community doesn't want that? And they say, well, we don't want that, and then they elect a school board that says we don't want that either, then the law would not permit them to overturn that decision. Is that correct?
Is it currently written?
Ms. Alschweiger?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm not going to say that I have the answer, but I think that there is so many questions on this issue that I think that it might be best to keep current law and debate this maybe at a later time. That's just my recommendation, because I believe that groups such as the Business Partnership, the Chamber of Commerce, a number of them support current law. And it is not so much a way of, and so I want to make sure that you understand, this is not like a let's take control from the school board, because they still have a lot of control. But it is more about some of the practices in the building. And so it's an issue that was discussed a number of years ago that was significant. It was controversial. And so I just would ask you to think very carefully before you would repeal this law.
Senator Bonha.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scogin, when I looked at the statute, the thing I was impressed with was it gave a very clear format for how to set up site-based decision-making. And so by repealing the whole thing, we lose in statute the process that it looks like was, you know, very diligently prepared. And so I might suggest that we consider repealing the mandate part of it in law rather than the whole section, the part that says the 60%, so that in fact if a site-based decision-making model is adopted, there's something in statute that says how to do it. My concern with repealing the whole section is we will not have anywhere in law a structure for doing it, if that's clear. Because I actually do I don't think we ought to have the mandate in law. I agree with Senator Scogin, your original bill.
Senator Hamm?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and just to, I want to just quote the part of the law that we're talking about here. It says, upon the request of 60% of the licensed employees of a site or a school site decision-making team, the school board shall enter into discussion to reach an agreement concerning the governance, management, or control of the school. And I read that, and I look at that as fairly prescriptive, that says if 60% of the staff of a particular school says, we want to do this, the school board has to do it. And my question is that if we're saying we want to hold school boards accountable for the results of schools, and yet we have a provision that says that what the school board wants to do can be overturned by the employees, then how do you hold the school board accountable?
Mr. Chairman.
How do you do that?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, would you Is there anything more in that? Because what that says, that the school board shall enter into a discussion regarding the governance and so on.
Does it have to make
the decision to go that route then?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, it says shall enter into discussions to reach an agreement. So it presumes that an agreement will be reached, I think, as I read that. And I'm not sure if there's been any school district that's got into this discussion that hasn't reached an agreement. I don't think there has been.
Mr. Chairman, maybe it should be if an agreement is reached. It would still leave the power with it, but yet not dismiss the idea that a proposal of some worth might come forward from 60% of the teachers that this board has hired.
Do we know how many districts actually use this provision, Ms. Hermanson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do have a memorandum of understanding with the school board on this, you know, citing the specific statute that we have done. The irony of this is when this language was added, it was a bill that the Minnesota Business Partnership had sponsored, and we were the only education group working with them to empower parents and teachers more. And that was started out at 70% originally. But the idea was that there would be an agreement, that the school district had the final say on that agreement, that they got to determine what was identified as a site. And we fully understand in Minneapolis, where we are using it, that we have to work with our school district on developing this type of arrangement. You know, it hasn't really been a power struggle in that sense between us and the district. And I think we are one of the only districts using it, but it was as part of an outreach with our community to look at what types of schools we have out there and then work with our parents. Our parents are very much involved in our process. In fact, have one-third of the seats, including the business partnership, has a seat on our Bridge Committee. So we are attempting to make this a community effort and working collaborative with our school district.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the bill as it's written, Senator Scogin's bill as it is written, prohibit Minneapolis from doing just that?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe it does.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rummel, I don't think it does either the way it's written. The problem, as I mentioned, is I think we'll lose the institutional knowledge of how site-based decision-making can be set up if we repeal the whole thing. And so I'm actually planning to offer an amendment. I don't have it drafted yet, that changes the shall to may. I served on a site council for 5 years at the high school, and we have just very effective site councils at all of our schools. And so, again, my concern is if we repeal the whole section, you know, and then you have a changeover in staff or in leadership, people will not have the understanding of how to properly set it up. So if we could make it a may rather than a shall, then I think we allow school districts to do it if they want to, and we provide the tools.
Senator Hamm.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoeff, I appreciate your thought on this, although I think I agree with Senator Scogin. I think if his original mandate repeal is enacted by repealing this particular mandate, it wouldn't prevent any school from doing what it is doing right now. And there are things in the law that sort of lay out how these site councils are to be formed, and it's fairly prescriptive. But I don't think there's anything, as I'm reading through this, and I haven't studied it here closely as we've been talking, but as I read through this, I don't think there's anything in here that would be something a school district couldn't decide or to determine on its own. I don't know that it is necessary to have something this prescriptive in statute saying if you do site management, this is the only way to do it. And I think in addition to the prescriptive nature of compelling a school board to enter into this, and also then here's how exactly it has to be done, I just am of a mind to say that if a school district is doing this right now, they certainly could continue, but it would give them flexibility to do it a different way if they wished. However, if we do not repeal this mandate, then, of course, we'll do it the way we are. And I, you know, maybe this is a I haven't asked Senator Scogin. I don't know if he knows. I don't know if anybody knows if this would result in any savings or any cost savings or any of that sort of thing. But it certainly would be maybe a little bit of relief in terms of how you do things, and certainly a reinforcement of the principle that school boards govern the school district and not some portion of the staff, which I think is an important principle.
And, Mr. Chair and members, remember the intent here in this whole bill is financial relief and flexibility.
Okay. Members, why don't we do we have any other amendments?
I have one
Senator
more.
Senator Barnhoff is waiting on an amendment. Okay, Senator Scogin. We'll just temporarily lay this aside for just a second. Senator Scogin.
I would, this is by request as well, move the A7. And this one takes us, members, as it's being passed out, will take us to Section 24, I believe. Section, right? Yes. And it actually addresses page 11, line 9, where we start to talk about maintenance of effort.
Okay, Ms. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and members, what this does is reinstate the maintenance of effort language on the Safe Schools levy and includes an option to maintain that effort, either spending the same amount as the previous year on the amounts for counselors, nurses, social workers, psychologists, and alcohol and dependency counselors, or to maintain the district's full-time equivalent number of employees as the previous year.
Does this amendment, or does the maintenance of effort, let's see, the way I understood your original bill was that the school district would still maintain the levy, most likely, but they had flexibility in how they spent that money?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. They'd still have that $3 per student adjusted set aside.
Okay.
But they would have, I believe, more flexibility in where that money went. Senator Wieger can maybe remind us last year that was directed specifically toward counseling, if I'm not. Is that correct, or as psychologist, Senator Wieger? Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Scogin, that's correct. There was a coalition of different groups and counselors, chemical dependency counselors, and others working with at-risk students.
Mr. Chair, would have to maintain at least that number of employees and direct that money to be used for the same safety staff, licensed school counselors, school nurses, social workers, school psychologists, alcohol and chemical dependency counselors, I believe. Is that right, Dr. McQuay?
Mr. Chair and Senator Scogin, yes, either the department would have to certify that the spending is the same as the previous year, or the number of employees is the same as the previous year for those positions that you've listed.
Okay. Just for clarification, Mr. Chair, if a seasoned teacher or counselor were to leave and you hired a new employee, the cost might be less, but you would have the same number of employees.
Let me clarify this. Within a few weeks, or probably even sooner, we're going to be looking at how we can reduce budgets. And not that I want to suggest that we want to reduce, programs or spending you know, for many of these needed reasons. But it seems like this would allow the districts some flexibility or more flexibility in trying to address the budget problems that they're going to be going through or are going through right now. What would be your response to that?
Well, I think that you're absolutely right, Mr. Chair. This particular provision, I believe, was brought forth with flexibility in mind, because we certainly could have taken out lines 11.7 and 8 and eliminated that $3 as well. But some in this committee fought pretty hard for that last year, and so that stayed in. But it does leave the school districts with some flexibility.
Mr. Chairman. On this point?
Senator Olson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, do we know how many schools used the safe proceeds of the Safe Schools Levy, which is in a reserved account, for the purpose of hiring their counselors, or whether they used just general revenue out of the... Because this is only referring to money generated from the Safe Schools Levy and put in a reserved account. If they use that money, that's what they'd have to maintain... here, it doesn't require school districts that didn't use Safe Schools money for those positions to preserve those positions. Am I correct in that analysis or not?
Senator Olson, you know, our fiscal analyst, Mr. Nauman, is under the weather, and I believe the department's covering another hearing in the House at the same time. But Ms. McQuay?
They're here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, that would be correct. The maintenance of effort is only for the money set aside on safe schools. So if the money is used out of the general fund for those employees, they could reduce it under that. And
Mr. Chairman, we maybe need to know how, if that is available in any records, how many school districts are using safe schools levies to cover counselors, school nurses, et cetera.
We have somebody here from the department. If you'd like to join us, please give your
name
for the record.
Chair, Lisa Barnes from the Department of Education. Actually, if I had thought about it for 1 second, I could see if I can look it up, if you'll give me a minute. Otherwise, I could ask Dr. Melcher from the Department of Ed as well to check on. You wanted to know how many schools are actually levying for the safe school levies.
No. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, is it Ms. Barnes?
Yes, thank you.
I want to know how many school districts that have the reserved account for safe schools levy are using it for that purpose, are using it to fund that category of workers, because that's what this provision applies to. It says if you've spent it, then you can't spend any less, or you can't have any less positions. But there's a whole raft of things they could use their safe schools levy, and I'm not sure how many school districts have made the decision to use safe schools levy for that purpose. It's
Mr.
not
Chair,
a requirement. Barnes. It's one of the ors in here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson. Yes. Oh, I understand your question. Thank you. Lisa Barnes, sorry again, from the Department of Ed. And I will... see if I have that on my computer, because I do have some other information about this, or else I will ask Mr. Melcher.
Thank you very much. Senator Bonha?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scogin, I'm just going to reaffirm that I prefer your original intent, that I don't think we ought to put more maintenance of effort language in the bills, that I think, you know, we've seen already that we have problems with maintenance of effort language with regard to special ed, and that, we want school districts to have the flexibility to use their resources how they'd like to. So I don't support the new change. I support your original language. And, in fact, Senator Hahn, I'm even going to withdraw my other amendment so that it's just cleaner. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Alschweiger?
Mr. Chairman, as the members of the committee, Jan Alschweiger, Education Minnesota, I'll just be very brief. We think that this is a realistic compromise, and we would support this amendment. In a time when the economy is putting a significant amount of stress on families and schools, this helps us try to make sure that we are putting some of those support positions, keeping those support positions in place. We need the school counselors, the social workers. The kids are going through, some of the kids and some of the families are going through some very intense times. And we think that this is a compromise so that the maintenance of effort in terms of the dollars is not there, but we do, the individuals would be there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Salisbury.
Thank you.
Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association. I can address, I can't give you exact numbers. I know some of the districts were concerned about using this because of the maintenance of effort piece in it. The department shared that with school districts as they went around the state, and I know districts got concerned that once in it, never out. And even with this A7 language, we create a protected class. If we were listing people on unrequested leaves of absences, these people would be untouchable. But we're not talking a lot of money. This was a $3 appropriation. So if you had 300 students, that's $900. That doesn't buy a lot of anyone's time. And if you had 1,000, it would be $3,000. Still not buying a lot of someone's time. But it is concerning looking at really the new lay of land for school districts in the future, that we would have one class of people that we would pick above classroom teachers. We would pick above other folks as school boards go forward to make some really tough decisions in the coming years.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We have the A7 amendment before us. Senator Scogin, you offered the amendment, I believe?
Yes, I did, okay. Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion? Anybody else that wants it? Testify on this, on the A7. If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Amendment is not adopted.
Return to the A5, Mr. Chair.
Yes, I believe the A5, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we take further action, I don't know if Senator Bonoff, you'd mentioned maybe you're not going to offer the amendment here, but I had a question, and I was reading through the provision in the law. There is a provision that talks about a site decision-making grant program would be established that would be used to fund some of the activities that are provided for under this section of law. And I'm wondering if anybody can tell us whether there's any money being reserved in this grant program to do this. And I don't know if somebody from the department or would know that, but.
Okay. If you could give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, Morgan Brown with the Education Department. Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, the site-based grant, the site-based grant was a one-time money for this current biennium of a total of $200,000. So those grant funds have been awarded at this point, but it's not a renewable grant. It was a one-time appropriation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Before we move on that site, the A5 amendment, the one thing that I would that I've been thinking about and have talked to a number of committee members about is in probably not this session, but I'm thinking that for sure maybe next session we need to do some serious work on the whole governance kind of issues relating to the structure of our schools and whether, you know, we had Senator Kubley's proposal before us where they're trying to bring some schools together, and it seems like other districts could benefit from some help from us in terms of how their management, how their governance should end up down the road a few years, and site-based. Another one that comes to mind is the Brooklyn Center, the community school concept. And I think there's others out there, other models, other ideas, and I think we need to, like, over this period of time before next session, try to figure out how we might facilitate the discussion and the change to allow that those things to kind of percolate up and actually become operating laws or operating principles. So, you know, it seems like site-based is one concept. I kind of hate to repeal the whole thing, as was mentioned here, but Senator Salzman?
Yes. And on those points, Mr. Chair, I agree with you. I think that there's been some very promising discussion. It's just that getting our arms around it in the next 3 weeks, there's the new Schools Minnesota model. I know Staples Motley came in when I had a meeting to talk about the governed schools. That's a proposal. They're very interested in that. And I guess that if this proposal was coming forward to delete this entire section because of there was abuse or schools were being taken over by these militant teachers, I would be more concerned. But I don't think we've heard that any school district has come to us and said, you know, these teachers are taking over the sites at our schools. That if we're going to have that discussion in a bigger, a broader context, and this is not something that there's been abuse, I'd like to see it kept in place because of the things happening in Minneapolis. I think we can learn some of that, learn some things from them. And if we can learn from that experience, and there are changes that need to be made in, again, a broader context, that we haven't dismantled something just because it's a mandate. That would be my concern.
Along that line, I did ask the question, how many districts actually use the site-based legislation? I'm guessing that not many do, but I could be wrong. Senator Hand?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know the answer to your question, but I think it is a good one, and we should find that out. But I guess to Senator Saltzman, your point, the mandate relief that we're looking at in Senator Scogin's bill, and we all got the list. This all came from recommendations of school boards and the school administrators. And so these are things that you may be right that there's not been, dramatic criminal abuse or, something of that nature. But these are all things that I think that the people charged with governance of schools are saying would be helpful in their pursuit of their mandate to govern schools. And I think our question should be, should the legislature continue to impose the judgment of a committee over and above the judgment of an elected school board on things that school boards can reasonably manage on their own? And I think this is a good example. Can school boards decide how to manage a site governance structure? And I think they clearly can. And I came from a school board, and so I'm sort of patting myself on the back, but Senator Fulby came from a school board, and Senator Wieger did, and others, and I think there's great capability on the school boards. So the question I really wrestle with is that with the law as it is written, that Senator Scogin's original bill would repeal, simply puts another impediment, frankly, on our ability to go to school districts and say you're accountable. Because with this provision in place as it is, they can say, well, we got stuck into this site management thing, and we really don't have great accountability over that because we've got an agreement that the law says we have to have. So, Senator Scogin, I support your original proposal to repeal the mandate, and so that would put me in opposition to your A5 amendment that you're bringing. And I think that, Mr. Chairman, to your larger point about governance is a good point. I hope we can take that up in a larger way at some point. So that would just be my thought.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I could answer a question. Is Minneapolis the only one that really is using site-based decision-making, or what can we learn? Is the School Board Association know if others are using this? If they aren't using it, it's not really a mandate that they have to concern themselves with, unless you had, as you say, a bunch of teachers come in and decide they want to do something differently. And I don't know that that's a real common occurrence.
Mr. Brown?
Mr. Chairman, Morgan Brown from the Education Department. This is obviously a provision that districts exercise on their own, so they're not required to report it to the department. The two that we are aware of are obviously Minneapolis, which has been probably the furthest along in following this process, and then there was also another grant to one other district. I want to say it was Fergus Falls, although I need to go check on that. So we know at least two districts that were exploring this process. We have not heard anecdotally of other districts at this point.
Okay, Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the Hopkins School District uses it extensively. I don't know that they've used it with grants associated, but they could continue using it even if we repeal this, so that's why I'm comfortable.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
I'm kind of torn because I agree with you. I think that we do need to look at some different models, and if you looked at the notion of I've heard the comment that you've got a lot of districts that you have a superintendent for some that are smaller amounts than you have in a building in many school districts, that it's an administrative unit type of thing that does not take away the schools, where you would actually use more of a site council to keep that community school in place, but do a shared services and administrative units, and a board would look after that kind of thing versus the actual school board would be at a different level than at the some of the kinds of decisions that are made at the school site. So, I'm going that way and looking at this broader context, I would think that we might want to consider leaving it the way it is, rather than repealing it.
Okay. Any other discussion on the A5 amendment? All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion.
Division.
Yeah.
Oh, he isn't ruled.
Division was called. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise their hand.
Is your hand up? Oh, is your hand up?
Oh. It is? Yeah. All those opposed, raise your hand.
Just makes a motion.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought this was taking it out.
No, just makes an option.
We have. It is 6 in favor of the amendment, 5 opposed. So the amendment prevails. That was a close one.
And Mr. Chair, two members just sat at the table, so who knows where that could have went.
Any other? Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, I see Mr. Frankel in the audience, who is representing the community education, and I'm wondering if we could go to that part of the bill and have him at least answer some questions about the community education provision.
Okay, there's a provision, Senator Scogin, relating to the numbers on page 8 of the A3 amendment, page 8.
Line 9.
Mr. Chair. Who do we have from community education? Do you want to please join Senator Scogin? If you give your name for the record, please.
Russell Frankel, Director of Community Education for the Montemita School District and representing the Minnesota Community Education Association. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and thank you, Senator Rummel. Special greetings to you. On behalf of the school district community education programs in Minnesota, I am here to speak in opposition to the provision in Senate File 672 that allows districts with a resident population of 10,000 people or less to be exempt from having a licensed community education director to provide school district and community leadership to serve the lifelong learning and citizen engagement needs of their area. This provision impacts two-thirds of the school districts in the state of Minnesota. Why is the Minnesota Community Education Association opposed? Community education directors receive extensive training and continuing education to provide leadership to their school district communities. They are in the daily business of providing for the educational needs of E12 students, as well as learners who are at various stages of their life cycle. They are in the daily business of maximizing district and community resources, eliminating program duplication, building strong communities through partnerships that engage schools, businesses, higher education, nonprofits, neighborhoods, cities, counties, etc. In effect, all vested community partners to address real life community issues. In fact, for every single tax dollar spent in school districts throughout Minnesota to fund community education, on average, $4 or more of additional dollars are leveraged by skilled community education leaders. They're the ones that make that happen. This is all at risk for the more than 200 school district communities that would be impacted by this exemption language. In current law, a variance now exists to allow school districts to work with the State Department of Education to receive flexibility that may be needed by a local school district to address a unique circumstance that may arise with the difficulty of securing a licensed director to provide for their community's leadership needs. MCEA is also opposed to the provision that adds teacher to be an eligible replacement to a trained and licensed community education director. Current law permits districts to request a variance in which a superintendent or principal could provide community education director / leadership duties. The competency licensure requirements of superintendent, principal, and community education director are more similar in nature. The competency licensure requirements of a classroom teacher and community education director are far from similar. Classroom teachers are trained and licensed to deliver high quality classroom instruction. Community education directors are trained and licensed to deliver high quality performance to their community classroom. Just as a typical community education director would be highly challenged to deliver E12 classroom instruction, a classroom teacher would be ineffective to deliver high quality community education leadership and related accountability needs to address the complex myriad of needs and issues that communities in Minnesota face. Lastly, in speaking with numerous Community Education Advisory Council members in the 200-plus districts impacted by this provision, the Minnesota Community Education Association is confident that our opposition is clearly on the mark. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Frankel. Senator Rummel?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to offer the A4 amendment.
Should we hear from the sure. Other gentleman? If you give your name.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ram Singh, and I'm a member of the Minnesota Board of School Administrators, and I'm the legislative chair. last year, and for many years I served as the chair of the Variance Committee. I just retired as a community ed director from the Rosemount Apple Valley Eagan School District. You know, I heard earlier you're talking about homeschool. I was the superintendent's designee for home and non-public schools in my district. It takes a licensed administrator to do that. I could have testified earlier for homeschool. Mr. Chairman, today I'm here to represent the Board of School Administrators. The primary charge that the legislature gave to the Board of School Administrators is to make sure that we have highly qualified administrators in all our school districts in this state. And we have worked very, very hard to do that. The provision in SF 672 to increase the threshold to 10,000 instead of 2,000, that beyond that you would need a licensed director beyond the 10,000 is not in good for the state and for education. It runs contrary to the charge that the Board of School Administrators has. This provision does not fall in the category of funding mandate, nothing to do with funding. Community education funding is categorical and separate from the general fund and other school district funding. Fund 4, which is Community Education Fund, must be used only for community education programs developed with support from advisory councils. Mr. Chairman and members, if this provision is passed by the legislature, it will impact about two-thirds of the school districts in Minnesota, and it will have a tremendous negative results in districts. The Director of Community Education is responsible for numerous programs, including ECFE, that has licensed teachers, ABE, that has licensed teachers. The director plays a key role in community collaboration, working with cities, park and recreation, counties, businesses, community agencies, the faith community, parents, students, and schools to make the community a laboratory for learning. That's what it should be, and that's what community ed directors do. If a school district, because of its size, right now 2,000 or less, cannot find a licensed director to hire, they can come to the Board of School Administrators and ask for a letter of approval that would allow them to have a non-licensed person as director, as if that non-licensed person is in a program to get his or her license. The board works very hard with districts to have licensed superintendents, principals, and directors so that our students, faculty, and our communities can enjoy the highest quality experience, learning experience. As a community director, I was responsible, as I said, for home and non-public schools in my school district, fourth largest in the state. And we had a tremendously positive collaborative experience working with the home schools and the non-pubs. A licensed community ed director, Mr. Chairman, goes through special training. We have just revised the rules where the competencies for all school administrators, we have to go through certain core subject training. Beyond that, a superintendent does his or her training that is applicable to the superintendent. Community ed directors do that. Among the competence areas, budgeting, community needs assessment, technology, diversity, safety and security of schools, because we open the schools in the evenings and on weekends and holidays, and dealing with advisory councils. Mr. Chairman, members, I think nothing is broken here. We don't need to fix this. I think we'll be shortchanging our communities if we lift the threshold to 10,000 instead of 2,000. Community ed directors are not just another staff person. I addressed the state convention this past fall, and I told them they are anchors in their community. If they are not, they should be anchors in your community. They make things happen. I urge you, please, not to pass this provision because it will not be in the interest of our communities throughout Minnesota. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Singh. Yeah, I think, again, I would just remind members that in a very short time, you know, we are going to be diligently working at trying to balance the budget and make reductions. And I know we didn't the list that we got was there's a lot of them, and we don't have all of the mandate reductions in the bill, but we got a bunch of them, and it was actually a list of mandate reductions that were supported by quite a few organizations, including the school administrators, trying to seek, in their words, "We recognize the seriousness of the financial crisis. We are in unprecedented times and share your sense of urgency to find workable solutions." And, you know, and I know none of this is very pleasant, and less than optimal in terms of what we'd like to do, but I just want to keep the thought before you that we are going to have to make cuts and reductions.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could ask MCE, how many variances were requested last year from districts that couldn't find a qualified person, and then how many were granted?
Mr.
Chairman, Senator Skogran, I do not have the facts with me, but if a district asks for a letter of approval, you get variance for superintendent, principals, and director of special education. For a community ed, you get a letter of approval. If they ask for a letter of approval, most likely they're going to get it, especially if that person is going to school, going to a university, and is in a program to get their license. I would say, thank you.
I think Skogan, if I remember what you mentioned yesterday, that only about half of the districts that requested that approval got it.
I believe you're right, Mr. Chair. I did mention that yesterday. In fact, exactly half. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Valerie Doslin, and I represent the Minnesota Community Education Association. My understanding, I did not have the conversation with the executive director of the Board of Administrators, but someone within MCA did. There were 46 requests for waivers, and 23 were granted, and 23 were denied last year.
And I would imagine that well, I suppose the flexibility would have allowed those 40 or those the other half to operate a little smoother. Mr. Singh.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that 46 is for all school administrators, not for community directors. It's 46 for all school, including superintendents, principals, directors of special education, and community education. I chaired that committee last year.
Okay. Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, taking into consideration the comments you just made about our budget, rather than offering the A4 amendment, could I offer an oral amendment that on line 8.9, page 8, line 9, that we strike the 10,000 and put in 4,000. This means that instead of exempting 253 districts from this provision to have a community ed director, we would exempt 134, which is double the number of districts that are currently exempted. I think we have to listen very closely to what Mr. Frankel said, that, and it's been my experience, that our community ed brings in $4 for every $1 we spent. And at least in the districts that I've worked with, community education has created partnerships with business and other community organizations that have saved our schools an enormous amount of money. They have filled in the areas where our school districts do not have the time or personnel, especially in ECFE and adult education. It's an extraordinarily valuable bridge between the schools and the community. If it were not for our community education department, I believe we would not have been able to pass our levy last year. And so I really worry if we weaken extensively the role of these vital professionals that we will be doing more harm than good.
Okay. Senator Rummel moves the oral amendment to line 8.9 to delete 10,000 and insert 4,000. Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair, you might want to remind me where we came up with the 10,000. I guess I'm not married to that number real firmly, and okay. I would support her amendment, I guess.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, in order to be exempted, do you also would you need to be under that population amount and get and apply to the Minnesota Board of School Administrators, or would that automatically qualify you if the school board in that district wanted to do that? They could just send a letter to the commissioner, or would they still have to apply? And if that board decided that they don't like our change, could they deny it?
Okay. Ms. McQuaid.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, Paragraph C would stand independently in paragraph B, that the exception under paragraph C would not be, you would not have to apply to the board for a variance, and paragraph C would allow districts with the total population of that number or less to identify a different employee. I think the only qualification is that they have to show to the commissioner that they have not placed a licensed director of community education on unrequested leave.
Okay, on Senator Rummel's amendment, and then members, that we do have a number of other amendments that we need to get to. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, in a school with 4,000, or district with 4,000 or less students, or 4,000 people, which it usually is more than the city, it's the townships that surround it, how many students would that district have? Anybody have an idea?
Senator Rummel, you mentioned this would impact 134 districts versus the 253.
That's right.
How did you arrive at that?
I was given the numbers by the the association. Ms. Drosling probably could answer the question.
Okay, but what was the question?
if you have a population of 4,000. What is the average number of students that would be in that district?
All right, Ms. Doslin?
I would say 4,000. We have 4,000 lifelong learners in that community that we would be serving. And so, you know, our business is the business of providing for the educational needs of all of those residents, from the very young to the young at heart. And so that... That would be the folks impacted by the legislation change. In terms of a school district population, I couldn't venture to say what the K-12 population would be. That would be quite different from community to community. So I'm not sure how we would arrive at that number, Senator Roblin.
Okay, on Senator Rummel's amendment, any other discussion, any other information? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign.
Aye.
Motion is adopted. Okay, Senator Scogin. Or who else?
Other amendments, Mr. Chair?
Okay, Senator Fulby.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scogin, I'd like to move the A8 amendment.
The A8 amendment.
Repealing all the repealers. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hamm.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if maybe we should just vote on Senator Scogin's bill and vote it down. Then we wouldn't have to go through all the amendments, because it seems like all we're doing is going through each one and saying, let's not repeal that, let's not repeal that. So.
I knew this was going to happen, because we all get weak feet or weak knees or something. Senator Fulby, or do you want someone else to go through this? Oh, Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association. This amendment you're looking at should be an easy one. MSBA worked with NAMI in order to come up to really fill what we thought was a loophole in the law. And this is agreed upon language by both sides. It took us probably the course of 4 or 5 days of hard work to get the right language in front of you. It addresses a problem between the open enrollment options program and the graduation incentives program. The enrollment options program says that if a child wants to transfer to a district other than their home district, the non-resident district has the right to turn down a child. That doesn't mean they always do, but certainly has the right to, for four reasons: possessing a dangerous weapon, possessing or using an illegal drug, selling or soliciting the sale of controlled substances, or committing third-degree assault or felony. So on those four reasons, it's pretty tightly, if there is a student that has committed those and been expelled, a non-resident district can say, no, we don't accept that child. The only reason that runs into conflict with the graduation incentives program, which lists 12 areas, that says if a student meets any of these 12 areas, you have to take them as a school district. Well, it really brings in, and one of the exclusions actually says, for a student who has been excluded or expelled according to the graduation options program. So there is a conflict between those two statutes. The language in front of you fixes the conflict and says the non-resident district has the right to say no to this student. The student's educational requirements are always taken care of under the resident district, so that doesn't end. It's just the non-resident district, it's clear, for these four reasons, can not choose to accept that student, Mr. Chairman.
I don't see that.
All right. Anyone else on Senator Fulby's A8 amendment? Any further discussion? Senator Bonhoff?
Mr. Chairman, I have concerns about this, but as I look at it, the A8, I don't see those four reasons spelled out, and so I'm also wanting to understand why I don't see them spelled out.
Senate, Mr. Corte?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's 124D.03. The reference there would point those out.
Correct. 124, Mr. Chair, members, 124D.03 allows schools that use open enrollment to exclude students based upon these, based upon those, if they were expelled for those reasons. And so what this amendment would do would transfer that to all schools, not just schools with open enrollment. It would conform it to the graduation incentive program. I'm sorry.
So it's a president.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Maybe I'm slow today, but notwithstanding it, a resident must first approve the enrollment application of any eligible student who was expelled under that section, or whatever those reasons were. It says that they've got to accept them. It doesn't say that they can refuse them. What am I missing?
Mr. Chair, I believe you would be you would not be allowed as a non-resident to go into a district without approval. So they would have to accept you.
First, with the...
Huh? Did I say that right?
No. With the approval of the non-resident district, they would have to willingly accept you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Kellner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. The non-resident district would have to say, yes, we're taking you. And there are some instances where a child needs a new environment or a new place, and it's a good placement, even under these four strong areas. If a school district is the right place, we don't want to preclude that child from going there.
Okay.
So it's that we're anticipating. But they have the right also to say no. But if the non-resident district is the best place for the kid, the non-resident district can say yes.
Okay.
Senator
Thank
Bonhoff.
You. I understand.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scogin, with our current open enrollment policy, school districts can decline students coming in. Is the way the current law reads that's only because of no room? Because I know our school districts do have a choice about accepting open enrollment students.
Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator Bonhoff, you bring a good point. The problem is between the open enrollment options program and the graduation incentives program. And in the graduation incentives program, it lists 12 areas where kids get a pass that basically says you must accept them. So they're in conflict in law. And those 12 things are things like they're at least 1 year behind. Is pregnant, has been assessed chemically dependent, excluded or expelled under this subsection. So these are children who have been excluded or expelled by their resident district for these four reasons. And it is not clear in the law that a non-resident district has the right to say no to these children.
Okay, Senator Hand.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and just to clarify Senator Bonhoff's point, and maybe counsel can help, but I thought if a district opens enrollment, then they cannot choose to only take, for example, non-special ed students or non-expelled. I mean, once you open enroll, agree, then you take anybody who qualifies for enrollment in any district, I think. And so this exception would only apply then to this program. Isn't that not correct? I don't think as a district, if you say we're going to accept students but not the ones that got expelled, I don't think you can do that. Could that be clarified for us?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, under open enrollment, a district may refuse to allow a pupil who is expelled during the term of the expulsion if the student was expelled for the possessing a weapon, possessing an illegal drug, selling or soliciting controlled substances, and committing a third-degree assault.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I was not aware of that. Thank you.
All right. On the A8 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. We have Mr. Brown. And then we have a couple of others that want to testify on this. Are there any more amendments? Okay. Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if we're going to address the prep time issue, but I would offer an oral amendment if it hasn't been on there.
Hear from Mr. Brown and then give your name again, please, for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Morgan Brown with the Education Department. The department wanted to let the committee know about one concern it has and the repealer, which is Section 27. This is on line 1217 of the A3 Delete Everything Amendment. That we have some strong concerns about repealing 120A.41, which, of course, is the section of statute that stipulates a minimum number of instructional days. And the reason for this is that the governor's bill proposes amending that statute instead of having a minimum number of instruction days to have a minimum number of instruction hours per year. It specifically is 425 hours for kindergarten, 935 hours for grades 1 through 6, and 1,020 hours for grades 7 through 12. And the effect of this is we wanted to make sure there was no net reduction in the amount of instruction time, for students, but allow districts more flexibility in terms of number of hours per day by setting this minimum instructional hour. It also solves the problem that was referred to regarding charter schools, where the current statute refers to the 96-97 school year. We have many charter schools that were created after that year, but now with this language in the governor's proposal, this would be the set minimum amount for all schools, both district and charter. So we just hope the committee will consider that as an alternative proposal as it looks at this bill and also the governor's bill during the session.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. We will keep that in mind and appreciate your information. Ms. Rosher from Eden Prairie. I probably really did not pronounce your name very clearly. Is it Angie?
Yep.
Okay. Please, Julie Cutshell from Lakeville.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Angie Rosner. I teach math in the Eden Prairie Schools, and I am here to talk about the prep time that is before you. And so one of the things that I would like to talk about is that I believe that the legislature should not be involved in limiting prep time of teachers. Currently, school districts, through a bargaining process, set the amount of time that teachers have preparation during the school day. What does a teacher do typically during that preparation time? I'd like to just talk specifically about what I do. Is I consistently am always revising and updating my course material. I use a smart board, so I always have to create those smart board lessons. I always am finding new resources to bring real-world perspectives to students. I build in activities for students so they aren't always sitting and listening to me. I'm correcting homework and quizzes. I assign a daily homework assignment, and I also assign daily quizzes as part of a formative assessment so that I am able to better prepare students in the summative assessment. We also correct tests. We answer emails, return calls, collaborate with colleagues if you have a common planning time. We also attend professional development classes. I know for us in Eden Prairie, we have lots of tech classes that we can attend during that time and other learning opportunities provided by the district. And at the high school level specifically, for students who are in study halls or also have open hours that they can drop in and get help from teachers who are on their prep time. Amazingly, teachers do all of this in a very short amount of prep time. So I would just ask that you don't shorten preparation time for teachers. Let teachers know that they are valued. They can make professional decisions, and don't repeal or don't shorten that preparation time by 20% over what they currently have. I feel that it would really hurt the morale of teachers for legislators sending a message to them. And I also believe that decisions should be made as close to home as possible. I know one of the things, Senator Hand served as our school board member in Eden Prairie and did a very nice job of that and consistently advocated for decisions being made as close as possible to the schools, and I'm sure he would agree with me on this very point. So thank you very much for the opportunity to talk before you here today.
That's a very good plug.
Chair?
Senator Olson.
Chair, I missed your last name, Ms. Cosell?
Rosner.
Are you suggesting that we should repeal even the current law relative to prep time then? Because you said you don't think we should be establishing it in law.
Repealing what is put before us, that it would be a reduction, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that we would, what is currently put before you here, is that there would be a reduction, and that would be that we not pass the amendment.
Mr. Chair, but you said that we shouldn't be putting it in law of the amount, so that would technically be taking it all out.
Senator Olson, I think some of us get that. It's a reduction in the mandate that we mandated.
Yeah.
Ms. Cutshell?
That is correct. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Julie Kutchel, and I have been teaching math and science for 22 years. When I was first started, my first couple years, I was assigned five different classes. I taught Algebra 1, Algebra 2, Chemistry, Computer Programming, and Pre-Calculus. Needless to say, the 43 minutes of prep time that I was assigned the first year was hardly adequate. It was a trial by fire. I learned to figure out what I had to do to get by, but it was never enough time. And so I'm here to speak to you on repealing the 20% reduction in the prep time. It weakens our ability to do our job effectively. We are dedicated and committed to maintaining high quality and high standards. At present, I teach AP Calculus and Honors Pre-Calculus and really need the time that is allotted. Our planning time is critical to establishing high-quality education. During that time, we are setting up labs, correcting papers. I can pride myself in saying that I have always handed my test back the next day, regardless of time frame and how many students I have in my class. But over the years, prep time has gone up and gone down. But like I say, I've had as little as 43 minutes of prep time to prep for five different classes. And so we are here before you to ask that the prep time 20% reduction not be included as an amendment. Thank you.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I couldn't said it any better than the teachers that are before you today. And if you don't mind, I'd like to move to amend by striking the new language on line 4-2 to 4-5.
Senator Dahl, I believe the amendment would be to delete Section 9. And then it would stay the same. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, before the teachers left, I just wanted to ask them, how many hours are they actually in the classroom now? How many hours do you spend teaching in the classroom of an average 8-hour day, I'm assuming?
Ms. Rosner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, within our contract, we have that we teach 5 hours and 20 minutes of student contact time. So, and the length of the school day for the elementaries is 6 hours and 10 minutes. And then if you take off the preparation time and lunch, but we are told that we have student contact time of 5 hours and 20 minutes.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, and I, before our teachers left, I also wanted just to recognize Ms. Rosner for her work in the Eden Prairie School District. And she's right. She knows me from when I was on the school board, and she often came before the board. She was, I think, at that time heading up our standards development. And every school district should have a teacher like Angie Rosner. She's been in Eden Prairie just almost an institution. She's really been very committed to math in particular, but I think high standards and good education, and we've come to appreciate her very well. And I do appreciate her comments about making decisions close to where the decisions take effect. And I think Senator Olson's right. If we take that advice seriously, we ought to just take all of 128.26 subdivision 5 and move it over to the repealer. And that would probably be the best thing we could do. But I know that's not the intent of Senator Dahl's amendment, so we won't talk about that at this point. But thank you for coming.
Any discussion on Senator Dahl's motion? Senator Salzman.
So just a question, Mr. Chair. You know, at the 80%, I'm thinking of a high school class that if you have one period that is free, that is your prep time, and then we say, well, it can't exceed 80%, how do you cut that up? Because, you know, the class period may be, say, an hour, and we're going to say you get 80% of that. Well, where are they going to go for, you know, 10 minutes or something? So I do support generally the concept, but if we put this percentage on, how that might be a scheduling issue, so if there was another way to phrase this, I think that we should be giving districts the flexibility. But at the same time, I just want to make sure that there isn't a technical problem in how that actually is implemented.
It's my understanding that this is for future bargaining.
Okay.
So we're not going in and changing. And so it would be contracts that would be negotiated in the upcoming year. Senator Dahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do agree with that might be an issue. We have a 50-minute prep time and 50-minute class periods. In answer maybe to your question, we have a 7-period day. One is for prep, one is for supervision, and a 25-minute lunch with the five classes on a typical 50-minute classes. I also, in talking about future collective bargaining or even current collective bargaining, remember when we had to try to deal with some issues with elementary prep time, and while it may have been a 50-minute, they were dividing up their 50 minutes in 10-minute increments over the day. We finally got it negotiated in the contract after 8 years that could be divided up into 2 periods. So it is a huge issue for teachers. I cannot tell you, if we went back and said, we're going to chop away at your prep time, you'd have 70,000 people here with pitchforks and torches. It is such a huge issue, and it's one of the biggest issues that we face at the negotiating table. And sometimes it takes years for us to make any movement on the prep time issue. Right now we have a specialist issue because all the specialists allow the elementary teachers to take prep time because they get to go away for 50 minutes into music, art, and PE. And we still are dealing with the specialist issue and the overload and the kinds of numbers that they're seeing without any break. 30 kids walk out, 30 kids come in. Prep time is so huge for elementary and secondary. Please don't mess with this little bit that they need in lieu of obviously no wage increases.
Okay, we need to try to wrap this up. Ms. Alschweiger?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alschweiger, Education Minnesota. I also have some concerns about staff development that I would love to speak to, but in the interest of time, I'll talk about prep time, and I don't know when I'll get the opportunity to talk about that, but that is as big of an issue as prep time. I will just say the reason I am sitting here today is because of this bill. It is what got me involved in politics at the Capitol. And I can tell you that all across the state, elementary teachers, middle school teachers, and high school teachers will rally around this issue because they have so little time to prepare for instruction that they will not let this one go. If you know, Minnesota is, and the entire United States is compared to Asian countries, other countries, in terms of their performance, accountability, and so on. I was in a course, a week-long course, this is in the summertime, from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m., all on my own for staff development, when Japanese teachers came and we worked with them about teaching about Japan in the schools. And they looked at our schedule. They laughed. They could not believe how little preparation time that teachers in the United States have to prepare for lessons. This is a locally negotiated issue, and I know Senator Hahn has brought that up, but there are trade-offs in negotiations. When you make a law such as this to reduce it to 80% of what they currently have, it's messing into the locally negotiated contract. How do you, as a Senate Education Committee, know exactly the trade-offs that were made in negotiations? So you are superimposing your decision on a local decision that is made based on the community needs, the student needs, the teacher needs, and the school board needs. Teachers have so much more accountability now than we have had in the past years. We have now report cards. We have testing. We have this. We have that. We have technology. We have expectations of communicating with parents. But yet we're talking about reducing prep time. We would urge you to support Senator Dahl's oral amendment and strike the lines related to prep time.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chairman and members, I just think it's interesting that, you know, we started out the session saying we are going to ask for these reduction in mandates. You know, we're going to really, you know, lift the constraints that we have in the school districts and let them work things out at the local level. And then it just looks like, you know, anything that was the least bit controversial today, we've not really allowed to go forward. And so it sounds like this is very serious to the teachers and to those at the table. But, you know, it just reinforces how difficult this is. And Ms. Alschweiger, don't you think that the school districts, if they had this, if we lifted our constraint, that you would still be able to negotiate that in your bargaining?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bargaining has reopened now as of March 1st, and the contracts expire June 30th. And that is a discussion that could be taken up at the bargaining table, yes.
Ms. Hermanson, and then I'd like to bring this to some closure here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson with the Minneapolis Teachers. I'm not going to repeat. The teachers made a good case for the need. I think Senator Olson, there's just one of the people who went through years and years of discussion about prep time in this committee when we finally came up with this language, and we haven't heard much about it since. It is a term of condition of employment. I agree with Senator Salzman. I think there's problems with making it work. We have 55-minute periods in our secondary schools in Minneapolis. And if we reduce that by 20%, we're down to 44. We'd have to restructure the days to make some of this work. It is a very, very, very important issue. The Minneapolis teachers went on strike in 1970, and Senator Dahl, you're right. The big issue on the table was preparation time. So this is an extremely important issue. And secondary teachers had a rule at the time. Elementary teachers had none. And it was a very divisive issue within the school district about who was getting the preparation time and how much. So we support Senator Dahl's motion.
Okay, on Senator Dahl's motion, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I do have sympathy for you on it, but pitchforks and torches? Are you trying to start a new manufacturing industry? I don't know if there's that many pitchforks around.
All right. Any other questions on Senator Dahl's motion to remove
Section 9, Mr.
Section
Chair.
9. So, on Senator Dahl. Senator Salzman.
So I need some help here. If I wanted to amend Senator Dahl's amendment, how would I do that?
I'm sorry?
If I wanted to amend his amendment, how would I propose that?
You just have to wait for it to vote.
You could, generally in committee, we just, vote it up or down and then offer a different amendment. Ms. Kelleher, did you have any very short words?
Mr. Chairman, members, Grace Kelleher with the School Boards Association, and I implore you, in a year where we're really looking at less money to school districts going forward, to continue to mandate not to give us any flexibility is really going to tie your district's hands. And in the end, more kids are going to be put in the classroom. Our choices are going to be very limited. And I suggest with this, either you take it all out and let your local units bargain this, but you already have parameters in 4.6 to 4.11. So to say those are locally negotiated, that's part of the state statute presently. So one way or the other, but we really need help, folks, and it's going to get desperate out there. And certainly flexibility in all these areas is important. Thank you.
Senator Salzman, what you want to just mention your amendment, because it sounds as if the language needs to be in there.
Right. What I might like to suggest is that on line 3.33, strike the word must and put may, and then on line page through 4, delete the new language. So that essentially it would be the previous language may include provisions for preparation time.
Mr. Chairman, that really doesn't take away the spirit of lines 4.6 to 4.11. That if there isn't agreement, then this part of the law would still apply, which is essentially 10 minutes for every 50-minute period. So if you had 5 classes, you would have a 50-minute prep time, consistent with what's there. You're just saying take out the new language. I'm not sure just what changing it to may must or may does.
Mr. Chair and
Ms. McCoy.
Senator Olson, the changing on 3.33, changing must to may, would allow bargaining agreements to include to include preparation time. Right now, it is mandated that bargaining agreements for teachers include prep time. And then deleting the new language on lines on page 4, lines 2 through 5 would remove the new language.
Okay. Senator Dahl, you've been tracking that?
Yeah, I'd prefer the word must stay in.
So you'd, okay. We'd like to take action on your amendment first, right?
Okay. I'm sorry.
All right, on Senator Dahl's amendment, the deletion of Section 9. Where is it? Section 9. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted. So, Senator Saltzman, then your amendment isn't really...
That's fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay, on the...
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hahn?
Before we can take final action on the bill, could I offer one brief oral amendment before we do that? And I don't mean to be controversial here, but I know it will be, so I might as well just... We'll just have a quick vote. But, Senator Scogin, in Section 10, this is your staff development piece, and you have removed the provisions that call for the sort of the detail of how staff development is to be done. And it would seem to me that the most logical way to deal with this would be to just delete your entire Section 10 and then amend the repealer to include Section 122A.61, Subdivision 1. So what that would do is, in effect, would not put any mandate on staff development from the state and allow this to be done at the local level. And, Mr. Chairman, in past years, I know we've done this, at least provisionally. We did it in 2003. And I think to Ms. Kelleher's point about trying to give flexibility some help, this would have the effect of freeing up 2% of the budget, general fund budget, to be used any way the school district chose to use it, including staff development. But it would also permit them flexibility to do other things if they felt that was a higher priority. So, Mr. Chairman, I would offer that brief oral amendment to delete Section 10 and add to the repealer the word Section 122A.61, Subdivision 1.
Senator Hahn, I'm wondering if we could revisit that in the overall finance bill.
Mr. Chairman, if that's your pleasure, I'd be happy to defer that. Yes,
I think that would, because this isn't really – it has a fiscal implication for the local district, but it doesn't have a fiscal implication that we can track. And so the education finance bill – that would be the right place for that, and because that would have a fiscal impact. And
Mr. Chairman, then I will withdraw my amendment.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, on Senator Scogin, the members, just to give you a heads up as to where this bill is going, it has to go to the Finance Committee, and then it goes to, from the Finance Committee, it'll be taken up, I believe, next week. Is it next week? And then it goes to the Rules Committee. It has that track. Senator Michelle?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just in general here, talking about mandate relief, I guess I'm trying to figure out how we got here and where we're going to go. We, all of us, had the benefit of the good work done by the school boards and AMSD, and we had over 100 different ideas for mandate relief, and now are we down to a couple dozen? Is it your intent, Mr. Chair, to hear that larger bill at some point? Is there another point in our process where this committee would intersect with that discussion? Because we've really discarded a lot of good work.
Senator Michelle, there's a number of the mandates will come back. The one, as Senator Hahn mentioned, that has a direct fiscal impact, because we wanted to deal with the mandates that we could allow to go forward that did not have a fiscal impact on the state's budget, but gave some flexibility and relief to the districts. We will be entertaining additional mandates that have fiscal impacts on the state budget or our budget as we put the overall education bill, education finance bill together. So that's kind of the difference. This actually, I believe, will be paired up with other divisions' mandate reductions, and then that'll become a, quote, mandate reduction bill.
Mr. Chair, you're talking about multiple levels of government there, and we're going beyond school districts with that larger package.
That's my understanding, Senator Michelle. So, okay, Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank your staff and council for help on this and all the organizations that walked some of these issues to us. I appreciate it. And I'd move Senate File 672 as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to finance.
On Senator Scogin's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is amended. Our thank motion you. Is adopted. Thank you, committee members, and okay, members, tomorrow we have we'll be dealing with the Type 3 school buses and online learning. So two very important issues. Committee is adjourned.
Not the No Child Left Behind.